Hello, and welcome back to ContraPulse. This is Julie Vallemont, here with the second half of our interview with Noah Van Nostrand. In this half of the interview, we talk about Noah's philosophy fiddling for contra dances, some contra tricks, and some stories about Great Bear's unique approach to dance music. We compare that to Buddy System and Wake Up Robin. And then we talk for a while about the future of dance weekends and how the contra scene might be changing and the benefits of a little time off. About contras again.
Okay.
You like to really interact with the dancers and really lock in with them.
Mm-hmm.
You also like to mess with the dancers.
Yeah.
And I couldn't always tell in Great Bear how much of that was from you or Andrew or both of you. Like, I would just look over and you would have this devilish grin.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that at all?
Yeah. It was definitely from both of us. Andrew was much more comfortable with messing with the dancers, regardless of whether or not it produced a good dancing experience.
Right.
And Andrew was very comfortable with, like, I don't care if this is not a good dancing experience, I'm still going to mess with them. That made me uncomfortable. But that would always make me uncomfortable when he did that. He's like, No, they gotta like us. They gotta like us, Andrew. Don't you want them to like us? So that would be like, you know, letting your solos and your phrases like go a little bit too out or something, and like it becomes easy for dancers to like lose their place in the music, and then whoops. There's a memory I have specifically. We're at a Great Bear's playing at a dance weekend called Roanoke Railroader, and I called it the Bridge to Nowhere. And we used to do it sometimes. It's where we just build. We were playing a jig, and then you play the bridge. You go into the bridge part that changes it up, and then we just like for the last four times through the tune, you do nothing but build, just like as much as you possibly can. And turns out when you don't release the build, you can build way, way, way bigger than you can when you have to go somewhere afterwards. Because what we would do, we would just like four times through the tune, solid, steep uphill climb of dynamics. And then we'd get to the end of that. And it's just this wall of sound and energy. And it's just huge. This is when we had like our drums and horns and huge band with us. So like just so much energy, and everyone is so ready for it to, you know, release and go back into the tune and be satisfying. And then we just stop. And every time we did it, there's an audible disappointment from the floor. Like the clapping happened eventually, but it was a hard stop. And it was an audible, oh, like, oh, oh, damn it. Wait, that's not what I wanted. So much disappointment. So fun.
I remember one year you guys did that in the main room of the Flurry.
Oh, did we?
Yes.
Oh, dear.
I was out there watching on the floor.
Oops.
And you built and built and built and built. There's 1,000 people in there all together. And it was amazing. It was palpable. Oh, it was like, Everyone just exhaled all at the same time.
So incredibly disappointed in their experience they just had.
It's like they got pranked or something. I mean, it's fun in the right time and place. And,
yeah, it's a Sunday. It's a Sunday afternoon thing to do, because if you do it Saturday night at a dance weekend, it's not funny.
It's like once people have settled in, they've got their dancing fix, everybody's a little bit loopy.
Yeah, maybe like a Saturday afternoon, actually. Yeah, Saturday afternoon thing to do. You're not dancing with the most important person that you've like waited all weekend to dance to or dance with, and you're not. There's plenty more dancing to come afterwards to make up for it.
Yeah.
But man, that is fun. There's a video of it somewhere. The Railroader one.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh man.
I saw it recently, and it's like, oh, that was fun.
Well, it's fun to mess with people's expectations a little bit.
Yeah.
It gets them. I mean, we can all get into our routine of what we think contra dancing is as musicians, as dancers, as callers. And then this thing that sparks all this joy and enthusiasm gets like a routine like anything else. And so one could argue that what you're doing is helping to get people to open up their expectations or just shake them out of their dream state for a moment.
And that story is an extreme, but like in a way that's still fun to dance to, Great Bear would make a point of trying to do that often, of using mostly dynamics, but how can we use dynamics in some way that is a surprise?
Yeah.
Yep. But yeah, probably one of my favorite memories of playing at Flurry was, you know, big dance hall, everyone, 1,000 people dancing. And our arrangement was we just play a D note. Like the whole band just plays a D note for 2 times through the tune. Like no other note, just D.
In rhythm?
Yep, there's rhythm.
Okay.
Yep, mom's just playing, you know, octave of D.
Do, do,
D.
Do, 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 do,
not
do,
that
do,
much
do.
Rhythm.
Oh, wow.
less rhythm than that.
Do, do.
Yep, more of that. And the whole band's just playing D. So it works because my foot is keeping a little bit of a tap. Like that's why it works, because we're all being very arrhythmic with our D note. And then we just get quieter and quieter and quieter and quieter, playing less and less, but just of one note. And then all at once we play, it's still just D, everyone's still playing D, but we are all playing as loud as we possibly can. All at once. And the fun thing about Great Bear, because we were a band for like long enough that, yes, it was surprising, but everybody was in on the surprise.
Yeah.
We were a band for long enough that all of our surprises weren't really surprises. So like the whole crowd knew that we were going to do this, and they were just waiting for it. Right. When's it going to happen? That was very fun.
Yeah. I remember hearing that with you guys, not the D thing, but you playing a little quiet tune or just being loud and then dropping it back to something really quiet. Mm-hmm. Most bands would then build it back up. And I just know with you guys, and I would just watch you on stage. I could just tell from Andrew's body language, he'd turn around with the guitar and look at the rest of the band and then bam, like all the horns come in, everything, the drums come back in, or even just the three of you, you know, those kind of off the cliff dynamics are really fun.
Dynamics, yeah. That's a very fun thing to play with.
And I know, and maybe someday I'll be able to interview Andrew once we're closer in the same place. But I'd love to get his thoughts about this, because they're a little different. You guys
sure
do not
different.
Share the same brain.
Nope.
And I want to let him speak for himself. But, he would often take it like an electric guitar solo, and the rhythm would drop out. And it would just be him. And he would just play less and less.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that set. Oh, that was a fun set. Yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden he's playing one note every 8 beats. And then it's just silence.
Yeah, if the dancers were good enough, because if it was like at a dance weekend where it was good enough dancers that they could like kind of know this was happening and handle themselves, he would play. Yeah, he'd play his like guitar riff and play less and less and less. And then like the last time through, once or twice we were somewhere where he just didn't play for the whole entire time through the dance. He was only able to do that because he slowly took himself out. Like we taught the dancers that, hey, this is happening. But yeah, I remember that. That was fun.
Yeah, like you said, that's not something you do suddenly. That's not the kind of shock you want to give them. He would play less and less and less so that they knew. It's kind of like transferring the rhythm to the dancers.
Yeah.
Like they have to now keep the rhythm. And it works best if there's like a balancey section to do it over or something.
They have
like
to be in
balances.
On it.
Yeah.
I find that is like kind of the little magical, for me anyway, this is helpful to know that when, if you're arranging things and wanting to be like having interesting arrangements for contra dancing, being interesting and surprising and creative and all this stuff, it's all really great. But like the responsibility to make it enjoyable for the dancers, my philosophy about it is that like the dancers all have to be in on the surprise.
Mm-hmm.
At some basic level or at somewhere. They have to be in on your surprise. What you do creatively, if it's really just out of nowhere and they're actually surprised, then they're not really able to enjoy it because they're confused and don't know what to do.
Right, and sometimes the dance breaks down.
Sometimes dance can break down if you go too far out without...
Yeah.
Now, if you're able to get them in on it somehow, using nothing but music, so it's a trick. But if you're able to like clue them in at what's happening without them knowing that they know, then it becomes like really, really fun because you're kind of, I don't know, you're all in on the secret together. And
And it's interactive. And
yeah.
And like that build thing you were talking about, even though they didn't know that was coming because you didn't do it very often, it's within the realm of things they expect from Great Bear. Like when you would go to hear Great Bear, you expect to be taken on this crazy adventure.
Yep.
And so it's not totally out of the blue. If any other band did that in the flurry in the main hall, people would be like, what? They get angry.
And I think some people did get angry at us. But
yeah. And I mean, to be fair, like not every dancer is a Great Bear fan.
Mm-hmm.
There's some people who don't want to dance that way. And you guys always knew that.
Yeah.
You know, and you
our biggest complaint we would get is that because we would take solos and sometimes the solos would, well, there weren't tunes, so they wouldn't be phrased.
Mm-hmm.
The way that some people really wanted phrasing.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would tell us, and then we would say sorry, and only kind of mean it.
And not change what we were doing.
Right. But yeah, that is the danger. Like, yeah, you got to make sure you're in a room. If you're going to play with it, you got to make sure you're in a room full of dancers that, you know, won't get lost or enjoy getting lost if they do get lost.
Right, like context is everything.
Yep.
And you know your audience, and all these things we've been talking about are some of the differences between like the dance weekend circuit and your like little local community dance. You wouldn't do these things at a community dance.
Yep. Well, we did, but it didn't,
oh, no.
didn't go well.
Okay, maybe I overestimated you.
not often, but I mean, yeah,
maybe you tried them and then realized it wasn't a good fit. And stopped.
We did it, but it wasn't as good. We shouldn't have.
Well, sometimes that's how you learn. I always think it's good to mess up a little bit in contra, because that's how we experiment and learn new things. And if you want to try new things, you have to mess up a little bit.
Yeah, and in contra dancing,
as long as you learn from it.
Contra dancing, the bar is low. It's as far as, you know, it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
If you mess up, it's really going to be okay.
Yeah, I mean, there's often times I see all the time, like a fiddler forgets an A part or a B part, the band gets off, the caller's like patting the top of their head, like, we're at the top of the tune, and you fix it, and you go back. And
like the absolute worst comes to worst is that you just have to doff all their parts, and you have to stop and start again, and that's still okay.
Like it can be disappointing for the dancers if they're in the middle of a good dance, and for the caller if the caller has a program. But at some point, if you don't do it all the time, you just have to hope that everyone is having fun with the form enough that they understand.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say whether Great Bear did it too much or not. That's not for me to have to decide.
You're an impartial interviewer.
Yes, that's right. With no opinions.
You don't
of my
have
own.
Opinions. You're just getting to the facts.
Getting to just the facts, ma'am. But I think you guys being mostly a dance weekend, like at the last year of Great Bear, you only played dance weekends and festivals. Like,
yeah, like
the only things that would hire a 6-piece band.
Yeah.
And yeah. So you know your audience and you have the whole weekend to spend with them. And so it's really like a one kind of contra music form.
It really is. Yep.
It's like contra music theater in a way. It's like It's kind of like actors in a theater production have to wear way more makeup than looks natural so that they do look natural to the audience.
Mm.
And Great Bear had to wear a lot of musical makeup and you still looked unnatural. So that's a lot of musical makeup.
Analogies.
Yeah, I know you like those. And so you guys are using things like dynamics, builds, like taking elements in and out, you do a lot of where like the whole band is in, now it drops back just to the fiddle and feet.
Yep.
Then the horns are and the drums are all back in together, like bam, like an assault.
And I mean, after 20 years, it was every possible little variation of all the different ways that could be tried, everything of how to play with dynamics. Dynamics was like our main thing we did.
Yeah.
And then that's why, like, yeah, I've listened to bands like Mean Lids and stuff where they do less of that. And, like, their strong point, and Elixir too a little bit, I feel like, their strong points are, like, not the over the top obvious dynamic changes. It's, like, much more subtle arrangements of dynamics. It's still dynamics, but it's, like, more gradual. And I like respect that so much because like I don't how do you do it like how do you like some mean that's like get to this like emotional state that's just you guess all the dancers are all like super emotional and it's just so beautiful and then they just keep on doing it.
They just stay there
and if anything they keep on going just a little bit higher and then like if it was a Great Bear tune we would have been like a freaking roller coaster all that we would like up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down and jerk people around that way but Mean Lids would just like slowly take you upwards until you're in heaven.
I would love to talk to them someday. You know, like for me watching, I think of them as like a band that like does the slow build. Like if you plotted the arc, it would be a slow, gentle arc, just always slowly increasing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's telling about my brain because when I watch them play, they're now on their last tune of their set or their only tune of their set. They're playing it with full beauty. The dancers are dancing. Everyone is in their zen place. And my brain is saying, aren't they bored of doing it this way still? Like that urge to like, well, we got to pull it back or it has to go somewhere. Yeah. Like that little voice in my head. I'm like, shh, quiet voice in my head.
Just listen. And it's because it's so beautiful.
They either manage to play without that voice in their heads and just be in that place, or they also silence it. It's probably different for each member of a band like that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the real thing. It's like you can stay in a place a lot longer for a contra dance. Like I think it was Ethan Hazard-Watkins and Anna Patton who told me when I was first starting out, like, if something's worth doing once, it's worth doing at least twice. Like double the length of time you think musically something would need to go.
Then dancers will hear it.
Yeah, and have time to feel it and get it into their bodies. And it's a very like methodical approach. You know, it's interesting. I do think we do that in Buddy System sometimes, like the slow builds.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that that was another way that Buddy System was different. Like some of our sets, it was just sometimes we got to like this energy level and then somehow it's very different from what I was able to do with Great Bear, but somehow we were just able to keep it up and then get a little bit bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very satisfying and very different from anything that I had been part of before.
It's fun to figure out how to squeeze all the essence out of a tune without needing to use tricks. Like, Great Bear wasn't trying to do that, so I'm not saying you're using tricks instead of that.
Oh, but we totally were, yeah.
But all the tricks were the point,
yep,
right?
Yeah, the tricks were the everything. Yep.
But it's like when you want to squeeze all the essence out of a tune, it's easy to force the tune. Like, you just start playing it really loud or aggressively or put 5 chords under it or something. But then I learned this with Nor'easter where, you know, the caller would always give us one more. And then we'd play everything we had. And then we'd like, well, wait, we still had more. So we started asking callers for 2 more from the end to make sure we had time to squeeze it all out.
Yeah.
And then, so when I started Buddy System, I had those things in mind. When we started Buddy System, I don't mean I started it, but when I wrote all of our repertoire. When I put all of our sets together. JK. That's half true. It's true enough to
be
funny.
To say that. I started to cringe. But when I wrote all the all of our sets and put them all together and remembered how they go and put all of our gigs together and lined everything up and managed our website and did our account.
Yeah. I would say that's true enough to be funny.
Yep, it is.
We're very collaborative, but we know what our roles are.
Remember that part I hadn't ever been in a band without Andrew before. Yeah.
Your role was playing the fiddle and occasionally writing tunes, and my role was literally everything else.
Uh-huh. That's how that band got started, yep.
Yeah, and continues in many ways. But that sense of like learning how to get that out of you and like learning as a band, like how much energy can we put into this tune, but not force it on the tune, but like pull it out of the tune. That is really cool. Like figuring that out. And it's not about tricks. It's just about settling deeper into it. And it might take 6 or 8 times through to really get to that place.
Yeah, that's cool to know. I felt that happening, but I mean, I don't think about that stuff. So I just thought it was happening. But you were like,
I was controlling.
You're doing it on purpose.
I was pulling the strings the whole time. I mean, when I play for dances, I either like to just plunk along and crank out good music and good rhythm. Like it's like the festival orchestra feel, where it's just good tunes, good rhythm, everybody can dance, happy, not show-offy. I was talking with Lissa about this in our interview for the last episode. Like, crank out some old New England tunes, just play the chords, don't try too hard. Mm-hmm. Or I like to also be in this mode of like, think about the whole arc and not control it, but shape it, like drive it, steer it. And really think about like, what's the dance experience, and then play off of the energy we're getting from the floor. Are they getting tired? Should we take it back? Should we bring it up? And you just like respond to everything I do so naturally that I, you know, and then you would also steer and I'd follow you. But it's that. So what about bands like, because you have other contra bands like Wake Up Robin and Faux Boss. What zone? I think of Wake Up Robin as being somewhere kind of in the middle. You have some tricks because Andrew's in it, and Audrey and Amy. This is Amy Engelsberg and Audrey Knuth. They all have a sense of humor and like to do fun, crazy things.
That band's interesting because that band is kind of turned into, Andrew is in it and Andrew does not run it. Like, Andrew doesn't pick the tunes and Andrew doesn't call all the like arrangement shots and stuff when you're during a dance. And that's, I think, on purpose on his part. But Audrey and Amy, like when in between the dances, Audrey goes over and talks with Amy and they like figure out what to do next. And sometimes Andrew joins them and, but it's not like his job. And actually it was funny in the beginning of that band, really confused callers.
Because they just expected,
especially callers that Great Bear had played with, like callers that knew us. Like, I mean, yeah, Andrew's on stage. Andrew's the person you talk to because it's Andrew. And I remember there were so many times the caller would like start talking to Andrew, and Andrew would kind of like nod and waiting to like interrupt to say like, and actually, you don't talk to me about any of this. Here is Audrey. Look, she's standing right next to you on that side of the stage. Yeah. That was funny.
And I remember that being really fun for both of you guys to be in a band where you don't have to orchestrate everything and you can just play.
Yeah. And I play, and that's another thing about that, is I only play mandolin. I don't play fiddle at all in that band, which is another, you know, for the past so long, I just play fiddle for contra dancing. That's what I do. And being in a band and I don't play fiddle for contra dancing, but mandolin, it is different. But, that band, that band is all, it's really fun to have that rhythm block with Andrew.
Because the mandolin and the guitar and the feet like, are the rhythm section.
Yeah, we're like glued. And Amy too.
But right, like, the piano, but like the strummy things.
And it's all really great. But like because I've played with Andrew for my whole life, and it's always been in the one context of him playing back up to me playing fiddle, like that context. And this is not that. It's like we're both playing back up, and that's a different way of relating to playing with Andrew.
Yeah.
And that's fun.
And that's fun for Amy and Audrey. Lucky them to get to play with such a rhythm section.
When Amy, Andrew, and I are all doing like full volume rhythm, Audrey kind of needs a boost pedal for her fiddle.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So someone was telling us, Amy's husband, Derek, was saying when he was listening a while ago, like, yeah, when you're all going full blown on the rhythm, like Audrey kind of disappears. She needs a little boost to like get on top of all that rhythm.
Yeah, it's not her playing. It's
no, not at all. I mean, she's playing and she's totally kicking ass. It's just right. It's just volume.
Yeah, but she finds this way for just to pick fiddle lines that just soar up above everything else.
Yeah, she's figured it out.
It's really beautiful. She's carved her space out up in the stratosphere above all of you. I mean, why do you, I'm hesitating because I'm asking a question that I bet you don't have an answer to, but this is a fun game to see if you do. Why is your contra mandolin playing different? You talked about pitch, but is there something else? Like you play differently as a mandolin player than a fiddler. And it's not just the notes. It's almost like how you approach everything is different.
Yeah. Trying to think of any sort of answer other than the boring answer of, well, it's a different instrument.
I mean, but that's true. Like sometimes different instruments just tap into a different part of your brain.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's any more analytical reason for it, but like I can't play it like I play my fiddle because it's not a fiddle.
Yeah.
I can't approach it like I approach my fiddle because it's a mandolin. And, That's how I feel about it.
It doesn't make you want to play it sloppy. Something about the mandolin makes you want to play it plainly.
I think the sloppy part that I like about the fiddle is the lack. Like, if a fiddle had frets,
it would ruin
it. If a fiddle had frets, but also like the bowing, also like when you're having an instrument that needs to be picked, it's a very definite start to that note that has a pretty quick drop off afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
And on a fiddle, the start of your note, there's infinite possibilities of how definite it is and how it can start really quick and it can start really slow and it can anywhere in between. Mm-hmm. Like it can mush into the note or it can start it off hard and sharp. And then on the same tonally, also like the noises of being able to play like sliding around.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do that in a mandolin.
Mm-hmm.
So like both of those things together, the mandolin, if I were to play the mandolin like the fiddle, it wouldn't sound good.
Yeah.
It wouldn't sound good.
Yeah, no.
It needs more accuracy, I guess.
It wouldn't work.
At least rhythmic accuracy.
Yeah.
And then the frets take care of the other accuracy.
Talk about repertoire for a quick second. Yeah. I mean, like in the early days, Great Bear did play some traditional tunes,
mm-hmm.
French Canadian tunes. Like,
yep.
If you look at the tune list on Dancing Again, there's a bunch
of traditional tunes in there. Yep.
Yeah.
We grew up playing, like before we found contra dancing, before Andrew found it at Ashokan, we like learned music from this little old lady named Granny Sweet.
Aww.
I know. And she only ever like wore dresses that she made. Like she's just kind of out of a storybook. It's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking back, it's like, was she real or is she a character in it?
Was she in Fulton?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the little outside of Fulton, the little city outside of Syracuse, and little Grant. So yeah, Andrew very randomly decided that he wanted to play fiddle, not violin, fiddle, when he was like, I don't know, 6 or 7 or something. And so mom thought he meant violin, and he definitely didn't. So then she was like, okay, I don't know, what do I do with this? So she, I don't know how, she didn't Google back then, but she somehow found this little old lady named Granny Sweet that taught fiddle. So it's like this very upstate New York repertoire, and it's mostly influenced by like French Canadian music. It's like very heavily influenced by French Canadian music, but not 100. It is also different. It is also different in little ways. Mm-hmm. And I don't really know what ways. I couldn't explain how, but mm-hmm. it's its own. Upstate New York has its own little niche of traditional fiddle music.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what we learned on before finding ContraDance.
And before creating your own tunes and sound and everything.
And then after ContraDance, after Andrew found ContraDance at Ashokan and like heard Wild Asparagus and heard Becky Tracy, then it was like all Celtic all the time. Like Celtic music was the best thing. Solas mm-hmm. was the best CD ever.
And it still kind of is.
That the first one.
Oh my gosh, the melody playing on that one.
Yep. And then Liz Carroll was the best thing ever. And then somewhere in there, he got really into Swedish music. And probably also from Ashokan, because Ashokan has a huge Swedish mm-hmm. portion of it. And that opened the door to like Swedish music, but also just like world music. Andrew got really into it. And I say Andrew all this time because
you followed
through
him.
All of this, I just copied what Andrew would do.
Like any good little brother. Yep. He just went along for the ride.
I didn't really have any musical taste of my own for a long time.
You didn't follow him to his Flaming Lips obsession.
No, I didn't. I was very annoyed when he liked Flaming Lips. Because I, like, come on. Now it's taken a while. But yeah, they're a cool band. They're cool. But I did not like that when he got into it. At all.
Felt left behind.
I felt deserted and cheated on. And like, how? I thought we were in this together, man. I thought we liked Liz Carroll. And now you're listening to this. Man, you've changed. You've changed, man.
Well, speaking of change, the last question I want to ask you is, you know, having been a dance musician for 20-ish years.
I know where this is going.
Well, please, go ahead then.
No, finish.
No, you.
Oh,
you
no,
first.
You. No,
no
please.
You.
Yeah, now that I'm not one, because no one is a dance musician anymore. Is that what you're going to say?
No.
Oh, no.
No. But no, I was going to say just, although, we're still dance musicians on the inside.
Yeah.
Like, it's like if a tree falls in the woods, is it still a tree? Is that what it is? Like, if a dance musician doesn't play for dances, are they still a dance musician? It lives on in all of us. Obviously,
yes.
You still have it in you, and
okay,
you would go right back to it.
I phrased it. Yes. You're right. I phrased it wrong.
But that's not my question.
Okay.
My question was, in the last 20 years, how has your experience, like your vision on, like your part of the Contra world, how has your part of the Contra world changed in the last 20 years? Like, how do you see it changing, and where do you think it might go in the future?
Yeah. I feel like for the last, like, from like when we started playing Contra Dance Weekends and dances in general, the dance weekend, like the weekend community specifically, like the nationwide weekend dancers, I feel like it had like the whole community as a whole was moving in a really positive, great direction of like everything was going great and more bands were becoming a thing. And more communities were like starting to put on their own dance weekends, and they were really fun. And there was all these dancers that were just so jazzed about how like good everything was. Like, I mean, a good dance weekend's really good. The sound is good, and the dancers are good, and the music is amazing. And, like, this is kind of like you said, this theater, like, this, it's not real.
And the snacks are good. The like, snacks the are good. Like,
just down, and it just got more and more crazy of, like, how good can we make this? Like, how good can it get? Like, destination dance weekends. And all, it just kept on getting better and better and better in one sense, but it is all fake. Like, it's not, like, a dance weekend isn't the community that is there after the dance weekend is over. And so, like, in a way, it's this, like, fabricated, amazing, wonderful time that over the last 10, 15-ish years, the community's gotten really good at putting on these events, and they're amazing. And I do think it kind of started to feel, the past, like, 3-ish years, it started to feel more like the energy was going more into the commodity of a good weekend, and less into the community of a good weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, the list of things that had to be perfect, because you're also, like, competing with so many dance weekends have started, and more and more competition, and the list of things that you have to get perfect to convince these dancers who are willing to travel and pay and go to these things because they're like what they love to do. It seemed to become a lot more like, consumerism or something. Like, it became more and more about the product of a good dance weekend, and less about like, wait, why are we putting on these dance weekends in the first place? And so, as a result, I also have, like, heard organizations about, like, almost, you know, nationwide, just kind of across the nation, has been, like, just less, like, dance weekends are struggling, like, less dancers are going to them, and so many factors into that. There's, like, economy factors, and just the dancers are maybe getting burnt out on going to 50 dance weekends a year.
There's politics. Like, after the last presidential administration, there seemed to be a change.
That's playing into
the aging of, like, the certain population of people who are going to dance weekends, who have the money to fly to these destination weekends. Generally, people with the money and time are generally older. They're retired. And as they get older, you know, I think some dance weekends do a really good job of recruiting young people. It's hard because you want to make your dance weekend really nice, but then it ends up being very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but you want a full multi-generational community. And so dance weekends that try really hard to have scholarships or volunteer jobs for people seem to have more energy.
Yep.
In general.
Yep. Dance weekend. And then just not every community is able to do that. But what the ones that are, it is generally help to have to get more generations involved. But it just was a general decline in dance weekend attendance, more or less. Mm-hmm. Not 100%. There are lots of weekends that were doing great and fine and not noticing at all. But in general, a decline. And I see it as it was not enough attention was being put into the communities after the dance weekend. Because, like, that's where you get new dancers. Like, you want to get young new dancers to, even a cheap one is going to be probably $100-ish or something. I mean, I know there are cheaper ones, but, like, in general, a cheap one is $80 to $100. And, like, if you want a new young college student to go to a dance weekend, they gotta like dancing.
Yeah, they do.
And they're only gonna like dancing if they go to dancing and likes it. So the energy focusing more on the weekend and less on the community, I think, has been hard on the overall community as a whole, because I think a lot of these dancers that, these Dance Weekend dancers, that I mean, I know them kind of like family at this point, because I've literally grown up with this community of like a handful of hundred people that I just kind of see all year long.
Because they travel where you travel.
All over the country. It's like, there's a West Coast family, and there's just kind of a family that I just see at least once a year, and lots of times more than that.
Yeah.
That I've known for like 15, 20 years since I was a kid. And lots of them, they're rightfully maybe they don't want to travel and go to 30 dance weekends a year. Like, I think that's also, but then it becomes more of an attitude of like, oh, they should. And then once you feel like you should go to a dance weekend because like they're counting on you to be there because they want to have a successful weekend, that changes the feeling from that magical thing that happens at weekends sometimes a little bit.
You should go. You should support your local dance weekend if you want to be successful. But that doesn't just mean you showing up and paying. It also means like being welcoming to beginners and all these other ways to build community in a more long-term, sustainable
definitely.
Way.
And I was more meaning like these, like a dancer would spend 5 years traveling, like a radius of 5 states, going to almost all these dance weekends, and those dance weekend organizers then became kind of like dependent and like expecting that oh, this person goes to my dance weekend.
Right.
And so there's becomes a little bit of like I should go to that weekend because I always go to that weekend and everyone's expecting me to go to that weekend.
Yeah.
But that's different from like going to the weekend because it's that magical, amazing, life-changing experience that you experienced the first time that made you go in the first place. And
and to truly make a weekend sustainable, there has to be something from within it.
Yeah.
That keeps bringing in new people and helps it grow organically and keeps that magic going. And, you know, you and I mean, you've played a gazillion dance weekends. I've played half a gazillion dance weekends. But between the two of us, we've played just about every dance weekend out there. And we've seen all kinds. And we see some that have this real community component where it really feels like it belongs to the local community. And often there's a local band who plays. I love the ones with the local band where we can meet the musicians. And some people come just to see their friends once a year. It's like their community gets together. And then there's these other ones where, like you say, people fly from all over the country. And I'm not saying one's better than the other.
It's just, it's different.
They're just different. But some of them, they have different ways of becoming sustainable, basically. And like to get back to what you said about like a fake, like it's like a community that exists and doesn't exist at the same time.
Yep.
And I always sort of thought, what a weird life I have where my friends are in all these different states.
Yeah.
This is really funny, but we keep doing it. It's like you can still feel like you're constantly surrounded by friends if you constantly keep traveling and going to the same places. Like, you know, I'd be in Asheville 4 times a year and I got my Asheville friends. And, you know, you see the Seattle people and then you see the San Francisco people. And you, like you say, and since this pandemic has started.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of like really good friendships that have been built. Like, you know, buddy system, we have like our band friends that we like to hang out with and we miss them. We don't, all of a sudden we don't see each other anymore.
Yeah.
And a few people have been commenting on like something like this is a test of what a community is really like. And I would say a lot of these dancers have been very supportive financially. They're going to Zoom events and concerts and, you know, donating. They're donating to like your tune a day.
Yeah.
They're donating in all different
ways.
Thank
you, by the way. If anyone's
if everyone's listening.
That's oof. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, it really helps. And so it's like, it's a funny thing because this nationwide community is a community and it's not all at the same time because it's not based in any particular place.
And that's the end of my train of thought is kind of like, I'm very curious about I feel like it's an opportunity and a possibility for like if and when like dance weekends come back are able to come back, I feel like people are gonna treat them differently, or at least I hope. I hope that it's been like a bit of a like reset button of like, oh, actually, I don't care about a lot of the things that I thought I cared a lot about, and I just want to see people and dance with them.
Right. Keep the costs down a little bit.
And just refocus on like the community part.
I mean, let's not forget also that some dance weekends end because there's no organizer who wants to take them over. Someone steps down from the committee. And it's so much work to run a contemporary dance weekend that often you can't find somebody who wants to do it, or it takes a whole team of people.
I was curious about, there's this accepted pressure that if you're going to do a dance weekend, it's annual. It's just like an accepted, it's an annual thing. Like, what if it wasn't annual? Like, what if it was, you do a dance? I know there's an answer to these questions, but it's, I wonder if there's brainstorming around that, because like, what if all these dance weekends weren't all annual and they happened when they made sense to happen? The problem with that is like, I know like promotion and like getting the word out, and like you get a reputation by having something annual, and that's how people know to come to it. And it would be really hard, but conceptually it would make more sense if like, yeah, you want to have a dance weekend, have a dance weekend. And then you don't have to do it next year. You can do it the year after that. Like,
I'm trying to think of some mainstream dance weekends that are every other year. I know Form the Ocean was started. Like, Form the Ocean was an all-women's, or people who felt comfortable identifying in that space, dance weekend. And they made, after their first one, they decided to do it 2 years later. And I don't know if that was their plan, but the organizers have a lot of thoughts about community and how to build it. And so folks could talk to any of them. All their information is on the Form the Ocean page, and see if they have anything interesting to say about that. You know, there are some newer dance weekends that are like experimenting with the format, right? Like trying to find out what works.
Yep.
And for many dance organizations, like for many places, a yearly dance weekend is the right amount.
Mm-hmm.
But for some of them, or maybe ones where there's somewhere one organization has an event in the spring, another one has one in the fall, but they happen at the same camp.
Yeah. Yeah.
By two different organizations.
Yeah.
And then they start to blur together, and maybe that's a kind of situation.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. I hope that the forced break that we're all on will foster some more appreciation for like that initial thing that was so magical. Like,
yeah.
And I'm not, I mean, it's still magical. It's still wonderful.
Yeah.
These are subtle things that I've picked up on in the past. And part of it also could totally be my perspective. I'm 31 now, and I've been doing this since I was 10. That's a long time.
And
maybe I'm a little, I mean, I know I was burnt out. I didn't
you
miss.
You played 30-something dance weekends.
I know I was burnt out because like it was, so the pandemic happened, and all the gigs were just all canceled, and I didn't miss it. I didn't miss it until like June.
Yeah.
Like in June, I was like, oh, okay, I miss it. I didn't know that I was that burnt out.
Well, it's the first time you've had off in practically your whole life.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's not just from gigging, it's from constant touring.
Yep, traveling is
like your whole life being on the road. So that makes perfect sense.
Longest I had been home since I was, probably 13 this summer.
And there's also shifts that happen, like as you get older, less and less of your friend group that's all the same age of you start to go off in their own directions. And they're not always at every dance weekend.
I'm sure a lot of this feeling is also like my personal perspective on it too.
But I have noticed it isn't just that. I have noticed it with weekends where some of them have seemed to like lose their luster.
Yeah.
And some longstanding weekends have started to not have issues with attendance for the first time.
Yeah. There's maybe this story isn't connected enough, but there's a, my Cool Hip Dancer videos, I don't know if anyone remembers those, but there's a little cartoon where a Cool Hip Dancer is talking to a caller in the first one, and then a Cool Hip Dancer is talking to someone who doesn't go to dance weekends in the second one, and they have like It's funny. You should go YouTube Cool Hip Dancer. They're funny. If I do say so myself. But I always had an idea for a third one because like the general like direction things went was like this new dancer gets, for whatever reason, gets like addicted and to contra dancing, and it's just the most amazing, wonderful high that they've ever felt, and they go to all the dance weekends and find this beautiful, wonderful, huge community of close friends and chosen family, and it's amazing and magical. And then slowly, I've seen it happen so many times, those people, they still go to all those events, they still go, and they just dance less and less and less and less.
And they just start hanging out with all their friends.
It's become so much more about just like, you're just going for the people, because this is just what you do.
Like, I guess that's a successful community then, isn't
it's
it?
It's a successful community. Yep. My third Cool Hip Dancer video was going to be about that. Like, the Cool Hip Dancer was going to go to dance weekends and, but never dance. I don't dance at dance weekends.
Until Extra Normal, that website shut down and ruined right. all of your artistic goals.
Right, that website stopped, and then I couldn't make any more. But...
last question is on a similar tangent, is talking about change, but like, what about the music? You know, like, it's funny, it's telling actually that we've had this now 2-hour interview and we've barely talked about techno contra at all.
Oh yeah,
when the, like, that's the thing that Buddy System
started.
Yeah, like, we started that way and we've done a lot of it.
Yeah,
and we never, like, I think we discovered that working as a duo acoustically worked so well that we just ran with that. We didn't choose not to do electronic music, but for me at least, I always thought of it as like a spice, like dessert or something. You know, like, you don't want to do it too much. It's just a fun variation. I was never trying to like change contra music.
Yeah. And I remember there was a while there where that was a discussion happening places.
Yeah, is everything like, going to be techno?
Right. Like, no.
At least there's some people who are like, yes, I want everything to be techno. Other musicians out there, but not us.
Yeah. To those people, I was just saying, good God, no.
None of us want this.
What? You thought that? Don't worry. It's not going to replace acoustic music. No, definitely not. Well, sorry, I was interrupted your question, though.
You answered my question. This is your interview.
Oh.
But thank you. You didn't interrupt anything.
Oh.
But just, you know, like, just getting your and our thoughts, my thoughts out there that, like, we always thought of it as, like, a fun thing. It's a fun playground. The electronic music is a fun playground because I can experiment with beats and rhythms and sounds and textures, and you can fiddle in all these different ways. It's another way in which you fiddle very differently, because mm-hmm. now you're essentially playing with a click track and a rhythm yeah. section. And if you stop, the music will still go on without you.
Yep.
And you can just make noises or laugh maniacally into a microphone.
Yeah, we had that set. Yeah.
That was a thing for a while. You know, just like playing around. And I think it's a fun way to play within the medium. But I was like, well, we'll just do techno as long as people think it's fun and as long as we think it's fun. And then I never wanted to oversaturate it. So I remember you and I saying, hey, let's do these less often,
mm-hmm.
but bigger. Like, I want it to feel like a thing you come to and you wait for and it's exciting and everybody shows up. And we don't want to get tired of doing the same thing.
And then it kind of became... We did our techno dances at like our annual gigs that we did. Like, we always did Flurry, and mm-hmm. we always did Leaf, and mm-hmm. we
Falcon Ridge.
Always did Falcon Ridge.
And CDH. Country.
Yeah,
country
and CDH. Holiday. Those like four things, and then it kind of just became that.
Because we realized through a lot of trial and error also that to make a techno contra, at least for successful for me, I want the lights and the sound and the room and everything on point. There's... And not all places have those facilities.
And when we would go on like techno contra dance tours, they were so exhausting because it was just a having a lighting needs is an added logistics.
Yeah.
Turns out.
Yep, to it is.
Putting on a dance. That and also like a subwoofer. Like it was, we couldn't just show up and with any sound system. It had to kind of be a specific sound system, and there had to be some way to make some sort of lights happen. And there's a lot. There's a lot of logistics added. Right.
And we want to work with a sound engineer who enjoys it and like
many
knows
of them
how to
didn't.
Do well, or even if they did, they have to know how to run sound for that kind of music. Like some people would make the fiddle so loud and the drums and bass would be like kind of backing tracks, like it was karaoke for the fiddle. It's like, no, the fiddle is in the mix, you know, like all those things. But, you know, I don't think that was meant to change the future of contra dance music. It's just a fun little off branch, at least for us.
And it, I don't know, the last past couple of years, it has seemed like it's, I've noticed anyway, that it's more just what she says, but more of a spice. Like it's not really changing contra music.
Yeah.
It feels more like it's a thing that happens from time to time, and people enjoy it, and the people who don't enjoy it are fine with leaving, and because they know it's not going to take over all of contra dancing.
right. I feel like just like putting on a costume, I love costumes and lighting because it's like you get to try on a different persona. I mean, many cultures have events where they have costumes and parades and things. And I feel like techno-contra is like contra dance, getting to put on a different persona and try out different parts of his personality. And like you see someone who's like fairly straight-laced and all of a sudden they're showing up at like spark in the dark with highlighter all over their face and like some tight leggings. And I'm like, you go, you know, you find your other self.
It's like a little PG Burning Man.
Well, I mean, I played for techno-contras at Burning Man too, you know, like it's another place where they're trying to like explore another facet of contra dancing. That's a whole other topic. But as far as the acoustic music, where else do you see it going? Like Wild Asparagus and then Great Bear, like you've already done a lot of arrangement things. Like where else is it to go? Where do you see it going?
I mean, that just depends on what musicians show up and play. I mean, what they come up with. I have no idea where it would go as like a, as far as like where I'm going with in contra dancing and playing for contra dancing is I feel like at this point I've for now anyway settled into the way that I will probably play for contra dances. Started out playing drums and then it became a certain way of playing fiddle and then the rock band thing kind of happened.
Yeah, we didn't even talk about Giant Robot Dance.
Oh wow. Yep.
That'll be an asterisk.
That was a thing. And then Great Bear became a six-piece, and then that had its own thing, its own persona, its own thing, and now it's I have a way that I play for contra dances, and I am pretty comfortable and happy with that, and I don't anticipate any large evolution anytime soon. Who knows? I mean, I'm not going to say like I'm done changing. That's stupid to say, but...
But you're not like looking for it.
Not looking for it.
No.
Not looking for it. And so the only other band, besides like Wake Up Robin, the other band going on for me right now is a band called Faux Pas, which is me and Andrew again. And Chris Miller, who's the saxophone player with Great Bear. And so we have a little trio called the Faux Pas, and we recorded a CD, but it's very much not a contra dance CD. Like there are tunes on it that you could contra dance to, and they're fun, and that's great, and we can play contra dances, and we do. But it is a concert band, and we're trying to act, you know, trying to do that. We're trying to focus on, you know, reaching out to music festivals and concert venues, and you know, we sing songs. And that's That's a very different thing. That's a different thing for me, because like all my confidence and comfortability.
I
want you to leave this in. This is good.
Quality. This is peak buddy system banter right here.
Comes from playing for Contra Dances. I know exactly what to do. I know I'm good at it. It's all easy and good. And playing for concerts and festivals is a different thing. Mm-hmm. It's a different feeling, different community, different vibe, everything. You gotta like, matters what you wear.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's different. And that's going forward at like musically as a person, that's not really for like intentionally trying to play things that aren't Contra Dances is a new feeling for me. It's a new unknown.
Well, thinking about like where tunes are going and where you're going, you know, you've tried all these different arrangements. You started by playing tunes. And I think that's the thing, is like your playing's always rooted in tunes, even if you're not playing them. Like you internalize that phrasing and things.
Everything is danceable has always been the number one priority in my music.
And then to end up like with like for Buddy System, for example, or even Wake Up Robin, those bands are more tune driven and less like riff driven or arrangement driven. And I feel like in a band like Buddy System, I feel like our current form, I don't know, I could play tunes with you for 20 years and not get bored.
Ditto.
Like, specifically with me.
Yeah.
Like, there's just so many good tunes out there. And that's the timeless thing. It's just a good tune played well in our own style with our own quirks. And then if you're bored, you can learn new tunes. Or I've been trying in the last couple of years of Buddy System to resist that urge. And instead of saying, I'm bored, I need new tunes, being like, how can I play those other ones better? Which is often harder, but like, oh, I've been glossing over this little chord moment in this tune that I never noticed. Let me get deeper and like find better chords for these tunes or play them tighter. Or, I mean, you can just always play the same tune better. That's an infinite well for me. We can always be tighter, although we've gotten pretty tight. But like, why do we need more than that?
Mm-hmm.
It's okay if you've tried every single arrangement idea in the world. It's okay.
Yeah.
So maybe there isn't an answer to what does it look like in the future, because we're kind of already doing what we were going to do in the future.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing, obvious, like biggest question mark around that question is like this pandemic, like mm-hmm. that's going to have an effect. This open-ended 100% break from the whole entire community. Like
95% break.
That's true.
There are online things and Zoom stuff, but yeah, it is a big thing.
It's
a big break. What's that
going to
do?
What's going to be left when it comes back, and what's going to be changed, and all of that.
Yeah, I think a lot is going to be left. I think it might restart in fits and spurts. It's interesting though, like the musicians are fed by all those jam sessions and
hang
things and camps, and it's not just as magic as you think. You know, like it's not just you go out there and play and you already know the tunes. Like, where do we learn tunes from each other? We write tunes for each other. We learn new things at jams and open bands and like.
And so much of arrangements happen at dances. Playing for dances.
We get ideas while the dancers are there that we would never get at home on a rehearsal.
And all of that's been put on hold.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting of like what's that going to change or mean? Like what's that going to do?
But I hope that the roots are deep enough.
Yeah.
It'll come back.
Yeah.
We're going to love it. Can you imagine?
That's kind of what I'm hoping with the community wise. Like it's, I hope like the rosy look out of this is that people will like kind of realize more of like really, really loving it.
Yeah. And it just, it's a great way to underscore the whole reason we do this.
Yeah.
Just for the joy of being together and touching other humans and being in the same room and having live music and moving our bodies and making new friends. And there's a truck outside on cue. Well, thank you so much, Noah.
You are welcome.
You'd think that we wouldn't have anything to talk about, but we just talked for more than 2 hours.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
We did it.
So thank you, Noah,
for sharing. Very welcome.
Thanks for listening to ContraPulse. This project is supported by CDSS, the Country Dance and Song Society, and is produced by Ben Williams. Thanks to Great Meadow Music for the use of tunes from the album Old New England by Bob McQuillan, Jane Orzechowski, and Deanna Stiles. Visit ContraPulse.cdss.org for more info. Happy dancing!